Hello, my friends. Happy New Year's. This is Mark Baber with, at long last, episode 10 of Begging to Differ. I apologize to you, a handful of faithful listeners, for my inconsistency of podcasting. I'm actually amazed that in the last month, I've had several people say to me, A, that they like my podcast, and B, that it's about time I record another. And so you know who you are, and I thank you, and here we go. We're 1 week into 2018, and still a lot of us, I hope, thinking about, how we're going to make the best of the gift of this new year. I'm certainly thinking in those terms. And I've got some stuff that I want to share with you that I think might be helpful. Who knows where this may fully go. We'll just put it out there into the world and see. But I'm actually, like a lot of people do at the first of every year, and I've done myself, every year I make a resolution or two, and they're like pretty much everybody else's who makes them. I want to typically, we'll say I want to lose a little weight or get fit or something like that, or read more or become more spiritually mature. Have better family life, any number of things that are worthy things to think about at the start of a new year. Why we do this in our culture, I'm not 100% sure, but we do. And it's common knowledge that sometimes by this far into a new year, I think I'm recording this on January the 8th, people have already given up and they're frustrated and I know maybe it's not going to happen, and just settle into the same old routines. So I thought 1 week in case you've already given up on whatever you were resolved to do, I want you to pick that back up. It was a worthy goal. It was something noble, I'm sure. And I think I've got some ideas that may help you go ahead and get with the program and stay with the program. So what I'll do maybe is just tell you kind of what I'm doing and see if that fits or resonates or connects with you on the things you aspire to. And we'll just see if it helps or not, okay? So what I'm calling this episode 10 is transformation. Transformation is it's a subject about which I have keen interest. Not really from an academic standpoint, because one thing that I am not is I'm not an academic. But what I think I know I am, and there's plenty of evidence, is that I'm curious. I am truly curious about a lot of things, and I think curiosity, can't take credit for being curious. I just am, and I hope you are, and I think you are, because the very nature of the fact that you'll take time to listen to podcasts, mine and those of others, says that you know about yourself. You don't know everything there is to know about whatever subject you choose to listen into, and you're willing to be taught, to learn, to entertain new ideas, to just be humble enough to just keep being a searcher. And that's what curiosity is. And I'm becoming convinced in my growing age that curiosity and the gift of being curious may be actually one of the most potentially transforming characteristics we could ever embody. So how to be curious and stay curious is a good question to ask. And I'm not sure I know the answer, but I think I know that just developing and nurturing a curious posture, a curious mindset about life may be the one thing, or certainly one very important thing, that does put us on the path to potential transformation. And let me say this about what I think I know about transformation, or just what my understanding of transformation is. Transformation is just this notion that my life can change, and that it can change for the better, and that I can play a role in hopefully helping my life change for the better. The fact that I want change does not suggest, or the fact that you want change does not suggest, that we're bad people, that we're worthless. Certainly all of us have elements of our life that can be more mature, that can grow, that can expand, that can get better. And I think just acknowledging that is part of being a healthy human being. I can and I should get better. And so let's think about it in terms of your body. You know, all of us in our culture, I don't know why we're so married to the notion of thinking that thin is better. I think a more valuable way to think about body issues would be is, let's just concur, let's agree that paying attention to healthier living is better. It's good. And I've seen that. I'm fortunate in the family I live in right now with my wife, Janie, that we're both, for some reason, want to pay attention to healthier lifestyle kind of choices with regards to what we put in our body. And I just do know that I feel better about myself. I have more energy. I'm more inclined to just be less abrasive and more kind and gentle when I'm paying attention more and being mindful about what I eat. So transformation of body. And then obviously I'm 1 week into the new year, and I'm on a roll, like many of you are, I'm sure, of renewed commitment to physical fitness in terms of exercise. I can honestly say that since I was 30 years old, so that's 37 years, working on four decades, I've paid a lot of attention on my journey to physical fitness. I have times when I'm more disciplined than others, and I'm really just on a roll of working out, and then I'll go weeks or months sometimes, but never years, with where I don't pay attention as much as I should. I'm not as disciplined to physical fitness, but it's 2018, and I'm back on a roll. I got in 15 miles on a treadmill last week and a bunch of other exercises, and I can already tell, and I can feel the impact of that. So we think of transformation in terms of just healthier living, and typically in the new year, it means we're going to lose a few pounds, and that's always a good thing. I can honestly say to you, you may or may not be happier if you pull that off, because really what it boils down to, I think, is who we are, and our happiness is just an inside deal. And changes may or may not contribute to that. But what I think I do know is that the effort to make changes and the commitment with good reason to make changes in our life is something that does add to our sense of well-being in the world. And there's nothing wrong with feeling good about yourself, feeling good about what you're doing to try to participate in making yourself a better person. And that's true of our physical health, And that's certainly true, and I think they're always related true of our spiritual health. Spirituality, the faith walk, that kind of thing has been very important to me for longer than physical fitness has been. I got interested in spiritual journey and spiritual life, faith journey, when I was in the Navy in 1971-ish. And for reasons I can't fully explain, I can honestly say there's not been a day in my life in the 47, 48 years since I got interested in faith life. There's not been a day in my life where it wasn't on my mind. It may have been on my mind in unhealthy ways, but it's been on my mind that how can I be more connected somehow, some way, some shape, form, or fashion in the transformational journey of a faith life, and how that might express itself in spirituality. And I think I've learned a lot. Spirituality, and my current understanding, is pretty simple. It's pretty non-churchy, even though I go to church. But spirit and spirit life, spirituality, is to me just being alive. Being alive while I'm alive, and paying attention to the fullness of the human journey, and paying attention to the fact that I just think there's something, always something more, and if I pay attention to it, it might make a difference in my life. So, long kind of introductory meandering thoughts about transformation. So let me just tell you in this podcast something I've been doing for the last 6, 8 days, 10 days, actually more like about since 2 days before Christmas. So however long that is, 8 days, 15 days, 2 weeks and 2 days. I decided a couple days before Christmas, found this journal that I started writing in last year when I was on a trip to Africa. I was going to kind of record what happened every day, and I did about 2 days and then lost interest or skipped a day, and then, you know, beat myself up emotionally because I'm so inconsistent, and kind of laid it down and didn't do much about it. But I found this journal book, and I decided what I was going to do for a few days, and I'm so proud of myself because I've got 2 straight weeks of sitting down in the morning with whatever I'm reading and with a pen in hand and just making a note or two about what I've read and a thought that may have come to my mind and a journal thought or two about maybe the day before or what I was anticipating for that day. And so that's what I've been doing. And then already I can feel the good impact of coming back and looking at it. So one of the things I was going to do this year, and so far so good, is take notes, take just a few notes on every day and on what I'm reading. And I'm always reading something. And I found this amazing book, which, let me tell you something. If you want to just really do something that will be transformational for you, buy this book by a guy named Kent Dobson, and it's called Bitten by a Camel. I got introduced to Kent Dobson by hearing him on a Robcast with Rob Bell, and I found it interesting, but it didn't really grab me, but I thought it was interesting. And then I heard him again on another podcast with these guys called The Deconstructionist, and I kind of got bitten by listening to Kent Dobson. And so I bought his book, Bitten by a Camel, Leaving Church, Finding God. What an interesting title. And I decided to read that book. And I read it, and it was a page turner that I could not put down. I read it probably in, I don't know, a couple days, 2 or 3 hours, if not that, maybe 3 hours total. But I mean, an hour and a half in 2 days, I just plowed through. It was a page turner. I was so intrigued by it. And I finished it, and I thought, it was one of those books where I thought, I got to read that again, and I got to take notes on it. And that's when I kind of started what I was doing back on about the 23rd of December, before a couple days before Christmas. So I decided then in this first podcast of the new year that I would just kind of go through and give some reactions to stuff that I wrote down from the first chapter or two of Bitten by a Camel, thinking and hoping that this would prove to be a podcast worthy of you listening to, and that it might stimulate you to go find this book and read it, or something else and read it, and let that be a part of your own personal transformational journey. So when I say transformational, I think all I'm saying is my life can change, and it can change for the better. And if my life changes for the better, mentally, spiritually, physically, a combination of all three, I'm better, you're better, the people around me are better. And so transformation is kind of a catching thing, sort of like flu. We're in the flu season now. We get around people with flu. We catch the flu. What if people had the flu of curiosity, the flu of generosity, the flu of openness to change, to peace on earth, goodwill toward men, and let it begin in me? What if that was the kind of flu we're trying to inflict upon ourselves and the world? That would be a good thing, wouldn't it? So that's what I'm trying to do. So here are just a few responses, and I'll try to keep this limited and stop when I've gone too long. I'm trying to look at my keyboard to see if it tells me how long I've been talking, and it doesn't. But at any rate, I'll just kind of judge it and see where we go. So, Bitten by a Camel, long story short, Kent Dobson is in Israel. And he grew up in a real fundamentalist family. Oddly enough, his father was on staff at Jerry Falwell's church, Liberty Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia. I don't mind saying, I've got absolutely zero use for Jerry Falwell, the late Jerry Falwell, and for the current Jerry Falwell Jr., who's running the university, and I don't even know who pastored that church, but I found it so odd that I'm reading a book by a guy who's the son of a guy who was on staff with Jerry Falwell, one of Jerry's lieutenants or on his staff back with the formation of the Moral Majority back in those days. And here I'm reading a book and being like wowed by this book. But I am. So that tells you a little bit of Kent Dobson's background. But let me tell you right now, he is no part of a Christian fundamentalist anymore. And his life has changed. Some might read that and say, well, he's backslidden. He's left the faith. He's quit God. And some will. Obviously, there are people that will read this and say, this must be banned because he has left the way. And heck, people may say that about me. But at any rate, that's Kent Dobson. And he was actually then the senior pastor at Mars Hill Church, which is the church where Rob Bell used to be the pastor for quite some time. And Kent left that, but that's really not part of the story right now. And so Bitten by a Camel is an interesting story woven around a story where he was in Israel studying. And he had a longing in his heart to kind of be in touch with God for spiritual transformation, for wanting to hear from God, those kind of things. And he had this notion that maybe if he went out to Mount Sinai, which is notorious in the Bible for the place where Moses received the Ten Commandments, saw the burning bush and all that, and is kind of Mount Sinai then is a symbol of where God and humans connect. And so he thought, quite literally, if I were to go to Mount Sinai, there I might truly, in some super spiritual moment, make contact with God. And it might be a place where this eerie silence is broken and I could actually hear the voice of God. I don't think that actually happened when he was on Mount Sinai. It's an interesting story of how all the tourists and other things are around when he's on this trip and he's cold. And great story. You'll just have to read it for yourself. But he's hoping that the silence will be broken. And actually what happened was this slobber-mouthed camel bites him on the arm and he realizes, as opposed to actually having some mysterious, wonderful experience with God, he's got a camel biting his arm and he's, you know, afraid he's going to consume him, and it's about him yanking his camel out. But then, or yanking his arm out of the mouth of this camel, and camel spit all over him and stuff like that, which doesn't sound very spiritual at all. But then out of that experience, very kind of painful experience, he develops the story that this book is formed around, and you'll just have to read it. But I hope that generates enough curiosity to think, well, that's worth reading. But so now I want to just start giving you some of the things that I wrote down. Kent Dobson said, here's the deal. I was just curious about faith. And I wrote that down in my journal, full stop. I was just curious about faith. And I know that that is my story. For whatever reason, that doesn't make me holy. That doesn't make me better than. It doesn't make me even different than anybody else. But it's a true statement. It's a good statement. And, I mean, let's be honest. We probably know people who actually aren't curious about faith. And I don't want to, and I'm not going to be judgmental of them. I maybe pity people like that. Because for whatever reason, I have been and I am curious about faith. And so I'm glad I have that in common with a guy like Kent Dobson. And one of the things that I want my 2018 to be about is leaning in to curiosity. And I hope you'll be that way too. Is identify the things about which you're curious and pursue that. That's, I think, part of what it means to be fully alive. Explore your curiosity. Another note I wrote down was, Kent Dobson said, I felt a newfound freedom to doubt out loud, to question the way I felt about God. Now, I've been feeling this freedom for quite some time. But it's an interesting thing about those of us who grew up in real conservative backgrounds. I grew up in a loving background, I've mentioned it before, but in a church background, Southern Baptist life, where, as I reflect upon it, we were not really encouraged to doubt out loud. Questions oftentimes were actually off limits. And there are a lot of people whose faith traditions put them on a journey where to have questions about their faith was kind of seen as a bit of a no-no. And there's a new thing, I think, brewing, and it's a new flu catching on, if you will, of where it's okay to doubt. In fact, just yesterday at the church where I go to here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, my pastor, Rob Briersey's whole sermon was on a passage out of Matthew 28 where Jesus is about to be ascended into the heavens. And says, some believed, but some doubted. And he built a whole message around the fact that some of them doubted. And one of the things that Kent Dobson will help give you permission to do is to feel free to doubt and even doubt out loud issues of your own faith, things that were given to you in your construct of birth, the family origin you were born into, the church setting or the faith community that kind of maybe formed or shaped your life. And if you're at a point in your life where you can just say out loud things that you doubt, It's interesting how that actually, instead of something that's going to, you know, subject you to hellfire, might actually throw you onto a path of new freedom and curiosity that you never knew existed. To go ahead and doubt out loud. I want to give you one example of how something in my life that I've pretty much always doubted, and I know I doubt to this very day, is like the creation stories in the book of Genesis. My wonderful mother, bless her heart, died believing in a new earth understanding of creation and the literal 7 days. She took Genesis literally as literal could be. And I can just remember from my earliest days as a kid in Sunday school and creation stories come along, I just remember having in my mind, I don't think so. I don't see how that could actually be. And it's almost like it would take more faith to believe that literally happened that way than to believe that maybe it's a larger story about some other things. And I really think it is. And this is today not a podcast about the creation story, but it's just one that I want to put out there into the world. I want to tell you, when I read Genesis 1, I go, nah, I doubt it. And I want to doubt out loud about that because I think there is a larger message. And even if I was dead wrong on that and were to say, oh, well, no, in fact, we have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that it did happen in 7 days. You know, God was off detached somewhere and just speaking words in English out into the universe and let there be light, and there was light, and it kind of happened that way. And then the next day, let there be plants and animals or however it unfolds. Even if it somehow were to prove these new earthers that, oh, yeah, it happened that way, then there's still a question we need to ask is, okay, so what? So what does it really mean? So all I'm saying is when Kent Dobson says, I felt a newfound freedom to doubt out loud, to question the way I felt about God, something in me goes, yeah, so do I. And maybe that's a really good path to be on. So, what questions do you have? That might be a good exercise right now. Pause this podcast and sit down and either write down or say out loud questions you've got. And I'm telling you, anything goes. It is all right, especially if you're by yourself, just to say out loud what you doubt. Just say it out loud. If you doubt the resurrection, say it. If you doubt the virgin birth of Christ, say it. I don't know myself, yay or nay. I honestly don't. I'm telling you the truth. And it's okay to doubt out loud. So doubt out loud. Then here's another thing Kent Dobson said that I had to write down. He said, I could no longer believe in a puppeteer God pulling the strings of circumstance. He said this after a suicide bombing had taken place at a cafe on a street near where he lived in Israel. And his reflections about God caused him to realize, man, I just can't believe that there is a puppeteer God, and you get that vision, and a lot of us grew up with that like God is sort of hovering above all that is in our existence, and that we and other humans are kind of like puppets on a string, and that God is kind of above it all. And if you can visualize a puppeteer doing a puppet show, kind of yanking the strings on the puppets to make their arms move and to make the narrative of the puppet story unfold. And unfortunately, a lot of us grew up with that kind of puppeteer notion of God as a distant one, and that the puppet strings move even more mightily in our favor if we can kind of get a good bunch of prayer warriors together and make it happen. And then, you know, the sad thing about that puppeteer view of God is if people really believe that God's, you know, all of us are humans, like God's totally in control, and the puppeteer view of God with all of us on strings is like that. Then when bad things happen, then it actually makes God to be the bad guy. It's always a guy in this scenario. And so for Kent Dobson to say, man, that tragic moment was the death of my view of a puppeteer view of God. That notion actually puts you onto a journey of leaning into other notions of what God may be like. And they're notions that can be scary and confusing to you, and because they are to me, but just saying, I no longer believe in a puppeteer notion of God, to let that view of God die in itself is an act that just opens you to other ways of thinking about God. And I'm not going to prescribe what those ways could or should be right now. I'm just saying, if you've had notions of God as a puppeteer God, it's a good idea to say, I'm going to let that notion die and see what else evolves or comes up. Another thing I wrote down in my journal, Kent Dobson said, my actual life was not lining up with my supposed beliefs. A rupture had developed between them. You ever been there where you could say, all right, I've got this stuff I believe about the spiritual life and the spiritual journey, and most of it has kind of been given to me in my family of origin and in the path of faith and faith development that I've been on for all these years. And here's my life and the way it's living out. And you see this dichotomy. On the one hand, you know, like I'm holding my right hand up. On the right hand, I've got all this baggage, some of it even possibly good, but this kind of, I've got these notions, this set of beliefs. This is what I believe about reality. And then on the other hand, I'm holding up my left hand, in which there's a mic right now, is my life, the way I live my life. And to begin seeing a rupture between those two is actually a good thing. It's a thing that shows us that we're concerned about being consistent, whole, unified. And if we can begin to recognize that we are not whole and unified, that what we believe on the one hand doesn't measure up to what we kind of live out on the other hand, somehow transformation then is about figuring out a way to marry these two, and probably on both the left hand and the right hand, some things need to be changed. Some of our notions, as we said, like the one on the puppeteer God, we need to quit believing some things that might match up with the way we believe, and we need to quit behaving some ways that may be more consistent with things that we believe. Yeah, I'll give you one example in my life. Like, I believe that peace on earth is a possibility. I truly believe that. And I aspire to that. And what I know is, if I am living with hostility in my mind and hostility in the way I react to some things in life, then my belief in peace on earth and my behavior about peace on earth are not together. And my job, if I believe that peace and nonviolence is a way to go, a way to live, then my job is to be able to say, how can I so live, so think, so pray, so order the moments of my life so that my belief about peace on earth would be evidenced by the way I treat my wife, treat my children, treat my grandchildren, treat my neighbors, treat my friends, treat my enemies. So, Dobson says, my actual life was not lining up with my supposed beliefs. A rupture had developed between them. Transformational living, as I understand it, is paying attention to the ruptures and trying to work for wholeness. He said, coming down the mountain was the start of something more difficult for me, a fruitful darkness that is more expansive than I ever thought possible. Well, I've never been up on Mount Sinai and had my arm bitten by a camel, but I have been on plenty of life experience situations where I was seeking, you know, God, or seeking ultimate reality, or trying to kind of be on that mountaintop and realizing that, you know, you got to come off the mountain back into the reality of real world. And I've begun to see that where it is difficult is actually in that arena where we have to actually live our lives. And Dobson, you know, began to see that he was, you know, moving back into the reality of his existence, and that having been on a mountain looking for a silence between him and God to break, and instead getting bitten by a camel, he comes down off of a mountain where he was expecting to have great visions of getting things figured out, and he realized he was walking back into a fruitful darkness. I love that phrase, a fruitful darkness. And basically what it says to me is, if I'm in a point in my life where I can identify and own that I don't know something, that no matter how far I've traveled, there's still an eternity to travel in front of me, that to get to that point where I know that essentially I don't know anything is oddly enough a place that is maybe on the border of a transformational journey. A fruitful darkness. In other words, stepping in to an unknown. A darkness is a metaphor for not knowing, for uncertainty, for lack of clarity. And to know that my journey is leading me into a step into a fruitful darkness, it's at one and the same time to hold both fear of the dark and an understanding that the dark in front of me has the potential to bear fruit, prosperity, newness, sweetness, juiciness, all the stuff that fruit metaphors could do to you. So I love that, a fruitful darkness that's more expansive than I ever thought possible. That's where I am today. I don't know what's in front of me, but I'm so excited about 2018 and about January the 8th, 2018, because I really do believe that in the midst of all the doubting and not knowing and uncertainty that is in front of me, there is, in fact, a fruitful darkness out there. And man, I'm fired up about it. I'm leaning into it. And I hope you are too. I'm going to give you two more, and then I'm going to bring this one to end. And I'm going to pick up with another episode maybe later today, but I might be a week or so before I bring it out. So two more things Kent Dobson said in the first chapter of this neat book that I wrote down. He said, I could not go back to my old beliefs and my old faith, but that's about all I knew. It's on page 18. I got there where Kent Dobson is. I don't know when. I can't pinpoint the day in my life. And I want to say this, man. I have left the faith of my childhood. I grew up a Southern Baptist, and I am no longer a Southern Baptist. But I want to say that I am totally and wonderfully grateful for the framework and the foundation that was given me by my parents and by a culture that provided for me the quality education in many, many, many ways, and gave me a track to run on for some years that served me well and provided a professional opportunity for me to feed my family. But for many reasons, some of which I've enumerated before, I had to leave that path. And I did. But I'm not angry. I'm not bitter. I'm not twisted with millions of good people that are still on that journey. And I love a lot of them. I truly do. But I know this. I got to a point a few years ago where I realized that home is no longer my home. Some of the belief systems and the mannerisms and the ways that faith expresses itself in that part of the body is no longer mine. And it's hard to explain, but I just know that and I'm okay with that. And I want to say that because I don't know where you are, but the odds are really good that if you're still listening to me and to others that I hope are in a similar vein, like the deconstructionists, like Rob Bell, like a guy like Kent Dobson, like a Jen Hatmaker, like Krista Tippett on Bean Podcast, like the liturgist Science Mike and McCarg, is that the guy's name? If you're in those kind of ways where you're feeding yourself and listening to and reading books that are of this genre, like Brian McLaren and the Emergent Church and Phyllis Tickle, I mean, I could go on and on and on naming people that are influencing my life right now, and I think maybe influencing you. You know that as painful as it was maybe to have kind of stepped away from the childhood faith package of your youth, that you had to do it and that you can't go back. And so I think just part of what's helpful on a transformational spiritual journey is to be able to transcend where you were, include and be grateful for the background of your youth and your childhood parental home upbringing, but know that I've left it, and about all I know is that I can't go back to it. That seems at some point to be dangerous, and it's painful, and it's almost like a death walking away from maybe the burial of someone you loved. I'm thinking now in visions of the day I buried my father, or we buried my father, and I can remember walking away from that cemetery, and painful as that was, but yet knowing I'm never going to get to go back to the way it was when I had that in my life. And I have regrets about some of the things I did and didn't do. There are minor regrets now. I've forgiven myself for those regrets, but I'm just trying to paint a picture of a very real life experience of walking out of an old country cemetery with feelings of, man, it's different. And however it was, we can never go back to it. I've had those same feelings about the faith package and the faith culture of my childhood that certainly it didn't die and is not buried because it's still very much alive in the world and doing so many good things. But for reasons I can't fully explain, if I was going to be being transformed and on a path to greater, that may not be the best word, but to other kind of growth and expanding spirituality, I was going to have to leave that behind. And I did, and I have. And that's about all I know. And that's what Ken Dobson says. And what that does is just put you in a place of being open to expansive, unexplainable, untapped before resources of something that is more and that is out there. I couldn't go back to my old beliefs and my old faith, but that's about all I know. I mean, why do I love that statement so much? I don't know. I do, because I've lived that, and I think you have too, probably, or getting there. And then this one final thing, and we'll close this podcast off, and we'll start with some more things that Kent Dobson said that are shaking me up a little bit, and I hope will shake you up. He said this, I wrote it down, hints and guesses is all we need when our spiritual mountaineering fails to work. It's on page 19. Hints and guesses is all we need when our spiritual mountaineering fails to work. I think that term hints and guesses, which incidentally, Kent Dobson has a podcast called Hints and Guesses, which I cannot recommend enough. I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you have a limited number of podcasts you can listen to, which you do, if you have to choose between Begging to Differ and you're listening to it because you just love me and you know me and you think, God dang, I'm going to hang with Mark. Well, I appreciate that, but I'm going to give you a tip. For true content that has the potential to really be transformative in your life, I'm saying add Hints and Guesses to your list by Kent Dobson. You'll have some mind-shaping stuff that comes from him. And he's such an honest, authentic, genuine guy. I think you'll love him. But anyway, the very term Hints and Guesses comes from, I think, a poem he makes reference to in the book. And you'll find that when you read it. But I love what he says. Hints and guesses is all we need when our spiritual mountaineering fails to work. Well, again, he's referring back to his trip up Mount Sinai. And you can just think for yourself about all the things you've tried to do in your life in your pursuit of understanding, pursuit of God, pursuit of ultimate reality, pursuit of, even if you happen to be an atheist, you know, or pursuit of whatever you see to be worth pursuing. And you pursued that and pushed down that path and looked for it. Like, say, for example, if you were a thoroughgoing materialist and you just busted your rear to get the kind of education and the kind of skill where you could make loads and loads of money, and you thought, I will be where I need to be when I've got a potload of money, and you got there and you bought that thing and you had that house or you had that, you know, sense of, well, we've arrived, and you realize, oh, I actually haven't. It's the same thing materialistically, atheistically, as it is spiritually. On a faith journey, you push and shove and scrape and struggle and battle, and you get where you think you wanted to be, and you get there and you go, oh, this is not everything. There's got to be something else, something more, something out there. Well, when you get to that point where spiritual mountaineering, as Kent Dobson describes it, you realize is not enough. And you kind of come off the mountain and you get back to yourself, to your quiet inner self. And all you've got is just some hints and some guesses. That's actually a good place to be. I just got a notion. I've got this hint. I'm guessing that there's something more. And I'm telling you, folks, that is where I am in life. I'm 67 years old. And I can honestly say that I truly, in many ways, feel like today I know less than I have ever known in a certain sort of way. But I've got this deep, inner, compelling, unrelenting hunch, hint, guess, hope, sense that in every single day of my life, there is the possibility that I can discover something new, fresh, compelling, that helps make me feel alive. And that is my experience right now, right today. Just yesterday morning, I went over, Janie was in the kitchen, and I went over to hug her because I had this crazy, non-sexual, just sense that I felt fully alive and that I was happy to be sharing that fully aliveness with her, and that I was so glad to be on that journey with her that I just wanted to hug my significant other, and I did. And that's kind of the way I feel right this moment, though I'm in my house all by myself recording this podcast, but I feel fully alive, and about all I got is a hint and a guess that there is something worth pursuing. That holy other that is not necessarily out there on a mountain somewhere, or out there in an achievement somewhere, or out there in a degree that I could attain somewhere, or out there in a new toy that I could purchase and own and hold and shine. But there is a new something to be discovered right here, right now, in this holy, sacred moment of being present to what is in my life and my journey right now. And what I want to say to you in closing is, I got this hint and this guess that holy, sacred, unexplainable other is available to you right now, in this second. Whatever you're doing, as I bring this to a close, let me encourage you. Take a deep, 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 deep breath. Notice that breath coming deep into your lungs. Feel it so deep. And then just exhale. And know that you are as fully alive as you ever have been and ever will be. And yet that fully aliveness still has about it the possibility to expand, to grow, and transform you into a better version of who you already are. And that's who we need in this world. We need people like you and people like me to be on a quest of fully being who the wonderful, great I Am, other God, ultimate reality. We have this hint and this guess designed us to be. I'll catch you later with episode 11, maybe in a day or two. Thanks for listening. God bless. Look up hints and guesses. I don't think you will regret taking the time to do it.